Daniel chapter 11 is filled with prophetic discourse. Thanks so much for joining me for this third part in this discussion. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, and welcome. Thanks for joining me. This is Dr. Fred. I truly appreciate you taking the time out of your day, wherever it happens to be in your day, to take some time to listen to this. And I hope these episodes and these sermon audios that I provide are beneficial to you. I certainly hope that. You can stay up with me and in touch with me through my two websites, studygrowknowblog.com, where I have all of my articles posted, and studygrowknow.com, where I have things like my books, et cetera, et cetera. So hope you'll avail yourself of that. If not, you just listen to these messages. I certainly appreciate that. And I hope that that you would keep me in your prayers or put me in your prayers, and that I don't fail the Lord, that I continue to study and show myself approved of Him, that I might rightly divide the word of truth. But thank you so much for listening to me. It's greatly appreciated. Now, in our last episode, which was part two, we managed to get through Daniel chapter 11, verse 5. And that's the verse, to help you recall, that tells us about the king of the south. Not by name, but simply as the reference king of the south. And from this and historical information, we know that that particular king was Ptolemy I Soter. And he was that very king. We also pointed out that when the Bible speaks of kings who are in the north or in the south, it is doing so using Israel or Jerusalem as the central point of reference from which everything else is noted. So in other words, because God considers Israel and Jerusalem to be the center of the world, and that's mentioned in Ezekiel 5:5 is just one place, the king of the south then would be nearly due south from Israel and Jerusalem, just as the king of the north would essentially be due north of Israel and Jerusalem. This would make the king of the north, according to scripture, connected to the Syrian dynasty. And we'll get to him soon and that whole dynasty. Now, as noted in our last article, Ptolemy I or Ptolemy the First Soter was important not only because he was one of Alexander the Great's most powerful generals, but also because Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth is connected with that particular grouping of four generals who took over portions of the Grecian Empire upon Alexander's untimely death. And that was mentioned last time. Antiochus is seen by scripture as a type of Antichrist because of what he did in 168 BC with reference to the Jewish temple and the Jews themselves. Antiochus's actions directly caused the Maccabean revolt, as recorded in the apocryphal books of 1st and 2nd Maccabees. And we're going to get to that eventually in this study as well. Now, what's interesting is the Apostle Paul in the New Testament points out the ultimate man of sin, and that's an Antichrist who is referenced in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And he is essentially going to repeat what was done by Antiochus during the middle portion of the coming tribulation. So what Antiochus did in 168 BC by defiling the temple, which we'll talk about briefly here in a moment, the Antichrist, the final man of sin, will do the same thing or something very, very similar during the final coming tribulation of 7 years. Now, sections of Daniel also compare Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth with the coming Antichrist. And we'll include some of that in this set of articles too. But for now, let's pick it up in Daniel 11:5, and we're going to move on from there. Here's verse 5 again. Then the king of the south will grow strong, and along with one of his princes who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion, his domain will be a great dominion indeed, unquote. All right, first of all, please note that the Bible predicted long before it occurred that Ptolemy the First Soter, or Ptolemy I Soter, would, quote, grow strong And he did just that. It's also important to note that one of his princes will also grow strong and gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion. Now, the over him is referring back to the first antecedent. And the first antecedent, or the first mention of an individual, is Ptolemy I Soter. In other words, this prince would become greater than Ptolemy the first if we measure sizes of empires. Let me read the verse again. Then the king of the south will grow strong, along with one of his princes, who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion. His domain will be a great dominion indeed. So we're talking here about what the prince is going to be able to accomplish. Historians tell us that this particular prince was another of Alexander's generals, Seleucus I Nicator, or Seleucus I Nicator, from 312 to 281 BC. He ruled Babylon in 321 BC, but by 316 BC, he came under attack from Antigonus, who was yet another one of Alexander's generals. It's very interesting here because Alexander was obviously the glue that held the Grecian Empire together. He was an individual who probably trusted no one, understood how men operated, understood that he would always have to deal with threats to his throne, and yet he was able to push it all away because of his power and his might, and people were more interested in following him than attempting to dethrone him. But after he died, the glue that kept the Grecian Empire together died with it, or began to crack and fade and become non-existent in a sense. So all these generals now are vying for position. So here, Seleucus I Nicator came under attack from Antigonus, who was yet another one of Alexander's generals. And because of this attack, Seleucus submitted himself to Ptolemy I for support. Ptolemy responded with military force against Antigonus. So this is a real soap opera that's going on here. Seleucus came under attack from Antigonus. Seleucus goes to Ptolemy I, asks for support. Ptolemy I takes his military and uses it against Antigonus, who is trying to unseat Seleucus. This allowed Seleucus to become ruler over all of Babylonia, Media, and Syria, a territory much larger than Ptolemy's. This is very interesting. See, that's fulfillment of the scripture. He assumed the title king in 305 BC and was the king of the north, referred to in this verse, verse 5. His dynasty lasted until 64 BC. So now we go back up to the verse. Then the king of the south will grow strong. That's Seleucus I, Nicator. Okay, he grew strong. And one of his princes who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion, his domain will be a great dominion indeed. So the prince, who, as it turns out, is Seleucus. I know it gets confusing. I apologize. It'd be easier if you could see it, right? So Seleucus submits himself to Ptolemy, who was already ruling. But Seleucus is a king of the north, so he is coming under attack from Antigonus. And he goes to Ptolemy, and Ptolemy provides military support against Antigonus. And this allows Seleucus, who is the king of the north, the Syrian dynasty here, this allows him to broaden the scope of his domain so that he is ruling all of Babylonia, Media, and Syria. And his territory becomes much larger than Ptolemy's, just as the scripture, Daniel 11, verse 5, tells us, along with one of his princes. So the king of the south, Ptolemy I, will grow strong along with one of his princes, Seleucus I, who will gain ascendancy over him and obtain dominion. His dominion will be great indeed. Interesting. So Ptolemy supports Seleucus, who is fighting a battle with Antigonus. Antigonus is defeated. Seleucus, because of Ptolemy I, winds up with a much larger kingdom than Ptolemy did. I find that fascinating, that even though their names are not mentioned here in verse 5, they aren't called this by name, just the king of the south and a prince. even though their names are not mentioned, we know who they were in secular history. I find that fascinating. I hope you're following me. I apologize if I have not made myself clear, but you can also read these episodes or these articles on my blog at studygrownoblog.com, and they're all labeled Prophecies of Daniel, Part 1, 2, 3, etc. So you can go there and look for those too. And in there, I've included charts. And if you're like me, you need to see things to understand them. So I've included charts to help make it more available as far as the information is concerned, so it sticks with you. I love history, and I realize that many people don't. You know, so I've included these charts, and the charts are from Dr. Thomas Constable's notes on Daniel to help you, which will hopefully make it easier for you to appreciate all that has transpired in Scripture so far. Even then, it can be a bit complex. So once Alexander the Great died, his top generals divided up the empire. However, that didn't stop other generals and wannabes from trying to ascend their own throne by attempting to conquer the generals who were already controlled, you know, who were already controlled parts of the Grecian Empire. Remember, once Alexander died, the glue died with it. So that left all these generals vying for rulership. They all wanted to get a piece of the pie, as it were. This was life in those days. And in fact, not a great deal has changed if you stop to think about it. There will always be people who see themselves as great political leaders or even dictators who want to control the masses of people and gain what other leaders have for themselves. Today, a good deal of this is done in the political arena. But wars, conflicts, rumors of wars are also used as a means to overthrow someone. Political sabotage is